we're not afraid to tell our guys we love them. We want to establish a high level of trust that, good or bad, very transparent. It might hurt sometimes, but we're going to tell you the truth.
On this episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast, we're joined by Coach Chris Kreider, the associate head coach at Rice University. A Pennsylvania native, Coach Kreider's basketball journey started as a player at Mansfield University, then went on to Grove City College and Lebanon Valley College before jumping into the coaching world. His early career included time at the University of Great Falls, where he served as both an assistant and later head coach for the men's and women's programs. From there, he made stops in South Carolina Aiken, Georgia Tech, Georgia Southern, George Mason, VMI, Georgia State, and SMU before returning back to Rice, where he continues to make a major impact. Known for his ability to connect with players, recruit high-level talent, and develop programs, Coach Kreider has built an impressive resume across multiple conferences. His experience at both mid-major and high-major levels have given him a unique perspective on leadership and team culture. In this episode, we cover advice for coaches and players navigating the transfer portal, how his first Division I coaching position came about, and the additional responsibilities that come with being an associate head coach. Please welcome to the podcast, Coach Chris Kreider. Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines. Welcome back, coaches, to another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. Your host, Alan Major, Doug Caputo here today. We are graced to be able to chat with the associate head coach, Rice University, Coach Chris Kreider. Coach Kreider, welcome to the podcast. What's going on?
What's up, fellas? How are you guys doing? Thanks a lot for the invite. Really looking forward to catching up with you guys.
Yeah, appreciate you, man. And thanks for what you've done for us in the past. For those listening, Chris has jumped on our roundtables before and shared some player development stuff and some short-sighted games. So that was some really good stuff as well. But yeah, glad to have you back, brother.
For sure. Appreciate all you do for the game. I love to listen when I see that new podcast pop up in the queue or whatever it is on this podcast. I always love it.
Well, appreciate that. Me and Al always joke, at least we got someone listening. It's always good to hear it's affecting and helping some people, right? But I know with you, we were talking before we hopped on to, and I know you had a different upbringing, I should say, more in South America. I know you have your growth and development around basketball. You had aspirations and just to play college basketball, work your way up to Division I. From there, going on to be a coach and just all transpired. But talk about your rise in the coaching profession, because I know we say it a lot and it's always something that really is good for, I think it hits home with people. It's good for people to hear your growth from being a player to ultimately going into a coach, high school, work your way up the ranks. Now you're the associate head over at Rice University. So just talk to us about your rise in the profession, how your goals from being a player ultimately led you into being a coach.
Yeah, I think that's the part I love about what you guys do is just hearing everyone's stories. I think we all have our own. I think that's the last thing we said before we jumped on. We all have our stories. Mine's a little unique. I guess I'll start from the beginning. You mentioned South America, but my parents were missionaries. So that in turn, when you're a missionary kid, as they call it, it obviously puts you in a situation where it's not an everyday life. They had a calling. I myself consider coaching a calling that I have, but my parents had a different calling. My mom and my dad and my sister, they made the decision as a family to go to Colombia, South America. They were missionaries. What does that mean? Basically, they moved into an indigenous tribe in Colombia, South America, and tried to plant a church. There was no church there with that indigenous group. So what did that in turn mean for me? As far as schooling, I had to go to a boarding school. So I went to a boarding school in Villavicencio, Colombia, which is the name of the town, outskirts, 40 minutes from that small town. They were located in El Chocó, it's called, but basically the Amazon jungle in Colombia. So I went to a boarding school. As soccer reigns king in the country, everyone's playing soccer. I'm 8 to 13, that range, those 5 years I spent in Colombia. But everybody's playing soccer. I fell in love with basketball in the middle of Colombia on an outdoor court. in the mountains. And so I guess what that meant for me, fell in love with the game. My parents are originally from Pennsylvania. So my seventh grade summer, they sent me home to go to a basketball camp at Lower Dauphin High School. That decision alone to send me to that camp changed the trajectory of my life personally. A friend of mine who I met at that camp, who now I consider a brother, his name is Nate Barton. His dad is the head coach at Lower Dauphin High School. So my parents, I'll make this story short, but it's definitely changed. We're in Colombia during, everyone's seen Narcos, you know, that era of Colombia, Pablo Escobar. They had a lot of military groups. So the reason we had to leave the country is because they were kidnapping Americans for ransom and trying to get political attention by doing so. I happened to be at an American school where they knew they could make their mark if they come in there. So the FARC, who, if you look it up, is a terrorist organization, they came in and basically, long story short, Americans had to leave Colombia. And so fast forward, my parents are still in the ministry. My best friend, Nate Barton, is just, hey, man, I know you want to play Division I basketball. My dad's a coach. Just ask your parents. Tell them you want to come live with me. So I did that. Mr. Barton, Mr. and Mrs. Barton, Scott Barton, allowed me to live with their family. And that's where the coaching itch started. And so my parents continue to do what they do. I live with them throughout high school, 9th through 12th grade, played high school basketball, dreamed of being a Division I basketball player. Did not happen for me. Ended up playing Division II basketball at Mansfield University, finished up at Lebanon Valley. In the middle there, played at Grove City College. So pre-portal, I was ahead of the game. Went to three schools. And, but I, looking back, I think it's allowed me to give advice to our players where I made the decision to transfer. I know why I did what I did at the time and how I can give them advice moving forward with their lives. But just to finish the question, answering the question. So I was a college basketball player. Then I wanted to get into coaching. And I guess my wife, Heather, now is the only one that I was able, the only reason I was able to go in this journey that I know we'll talk about. I was a high school coach, ended up getting into the college game, but only with her support, because as you guys know, you can't do it without a spouse that totally understands this profession.
Yeah, said, man. It's funny, the common thread through your story is empathy, because you had the Bartons, who are incredibly empathetic in terms of, hey man, just come and stay with us. And then obviously your wife having incredible empathy in terms of jumping in with you, full support. Don't know where this ride's going, but right. As long as you're on it, I'm with you. Type of deal.
Yeah. And so here's how it happened for me. And I think this will get the conversation going. I was a high school coach for 3 years in Atlanta, Georgia. And my wife, Heather, is from Atlanta. I moved to Atlanta after spending 1 year at the University of Great Falls. How did I end up at Great Falls? I did it the old school way, and people listening to this might not know how this works, but I did it the camp circuit way. Every summer while I was at Grove City, my roommate, Andy Vlakovich, and I wanted to get into coaching. And so I chose to do this camp scene circuit every summer. I went from Princeton to North Carolina to UCLA. Those were three that I did, but how did I get to UCLA? It was a connection from Central Pennsylvania. Scott Pera, who I worked for here at Rice the first time I was here, he just helped me get in the door with Doug Erickson at UCLA. Doug Erickson is still at UCLA running the show there. He's the best. So I met Matt Genesee at UCLA's camp. His father, Mike Genesee, was the head coach at Great Falls. So that's how I got into it. So fast forward, moved to Atlanta, don't have a job. I know I wanted to marry this girl, Heather. So I get a job waiting tables at Copeland's restaurant on Cobb Parkway. And I was like, okay, I majored in Spanish. I didn't do my student teaching because I chased coaching at Great Falls. So I was like, okay, I need to get a job here. I interviewed at a couple different private schools because I wasn't certified to teach, got a job at St. Francis High School. And in the interview, they just said, hey, I see you play basketball. Any interest in coaching? And I said, for sure, but I really need this Spanish teaching job. So I made sure I got that job first. Ended up coaching different levels in high school. Assistant JV boys coach 1 year, varsity girls coach 1 year, and then the boys head coach the third year. But I started getting the itch to get into it, to college, and Heather gave her blessing. So I just wanted to tell three quick stories. So the first was I went to a Division II game with one of our players, and ran into Vince Alexander. He was the coach at USC Aiken at the time. He let me volunteer. So that was my first foot in the door. And I think that's what you have to do in this thing, is you just have to get your foot in. And then he allowed me, encouraged me to grow. And I wanted to get to the Division I level, so I chased a job at Georgia Tech. That's a story in and of itself. But Coach Hewitt, Paul Hewitt, I owe so much career to him. He allowed me to volunteer. And then from there, I went with CY to Georgia Southern. That was my first Division I assistant job. But I just wanted to tell those three quick stories. It was just three people that gave me a chance that I definitely didn't deserve. But all of those things were connected. And I think that's the cool part. As you look back, that's how it works.
Yeah, no, for sure, man. You described the essence of what Doug and I try to talk about all the time. Like, you can't really, engineers can pick and choose where they want to work, right? Doctors can pick and choose where they want to work. My sister, she's been a nurse for 30 years. If she decided to be a travel nurse, she could go anywhere and make whatever she probably could demand, because those are professions that can pick and choose. Ours, not so much, right? We got to follow the Forrest Gump leaf that's floating in the wind and go where the opportunities take us. No, honestly, that's what we have. But I love that you're sharing this, because we've all had to take that leap and not know what's on the other side of it. But the mentality that you've had through this thing has been awesome. Was Coach Barton at Lower Dolphin, was he, I'm guessing that was probably your first coach?
Yeah.
Was he the one that kind of really, because people do obviously jump in it for different reasons, right? They jump in it maybe because somebody told them you could really be a coach, you could be good at this. Or the way they were coached growing up just inspires them internally, and they just decide to do it because of how they were coached. So was that a combination of the two, or one or the other, or with Coach Barton?
Yeah, it definitely was. He coached for the right reasons, in my opinion. He was a high school keyboarding coach during the day, and then a head high school coach at Lower Dolphin the rest of the day. And even during the time he was supposed to be teaching keyboarding probably too. But yeah, he was a father figure to me. I grew up in his home. He opened his home to me, which he definitely didn't have to do looking back. But yeah, he, like I said, I think coaching is a calling. If you coach for the wrong reasons, at sooner or later, you're going to get exposed. Because if you coach for the money, I could just tell you, me personally, some people maybe have a different experience, but I had to volunteer at USC Aiken. So how did I pay the bills? I taught middle school Spanish at Episcopal Day School, which is 30 minutes away in Augusta, Georgia. And then I volunteered at Georgia Tech. How did I pay the bills? Taught Spanish at Mount Pisgah High School in Alpharetta. They allowed me to teach until 1 p.m., got in the car, drove down to Georgia Tech, and was there the rest of the day. But I think when you do things, I guess, for certain reasons, coaching is one of those where you have to be in it for those, or else I think you get exposed or things go sour pretty fast.
Yeah, it's so true, man. Tony Dungy had a great quote, one of his books, and I can't remember which book it was, but he talked about the difference between mercenaries and volunteers, right? And mercenaries will go wherever you tell them to go. But the first question a mercenary asks is, how much is this? What are you going to pay me? Because mercenaries are going to go. They're going to jump out of planes. They're going to do what they have to do, but they're going to do it for the money.
Right.
And volunteers are going to do it from the heart, because they know there's no money involved, but it's a heart thing for them. And they're going to let their heart be the one that makes a decision versus money making the decision. Nice. I always thought that was a pretty cool quote when he said that, but that's what's so great about your story, is you let your heart lead the way, because you know that our business to do it the right way it is a calling. It is something that has got to be deeply personal. That's beyond just winning games, losing games. Yeah, you want players to get buckets, that's great, but if you really show them how to get buckets in life, now you're talking, right? And that's what, may we all never forget that approach.
Yeah, no, and I hate to, there's two things I definitely have to say, because I know when
I'm rip
your guys' podcast, this is what I always take, is you guys have different types of coaches or staff or people from all over. But two things specifically, as I replay kind of my past and the journey part of it, but at Georgia Tech, Coach Hewitt didn't have to give me an opportunity. And the reason that opportunity presented itself is because someone told me, gave me advice as a young coach, to always be available and to just keep showing up. And it's a funny story in and of itself of how that happened, but that's how I literally got the job. I just kept showing up. The guy that he was going to hire for the GA spot he had to finish school. Anthony McHenry, a former player, big time player at Georgia Tech. But by continuing to show up, I just stumbled on it. But if I wouldn't have stumbled on it and got my foot in the door at that level, I wouldn't have gone to Georgia Southern with the one and only CY. I know everyone knows Charlton Young. He's one of the best in the business. But so by showing up at Georgia Tech and borderline chasing, AKA stalking that opportunity, like I recruited that job really hard. I wanted it. And Coach Hewitt gave it to me. But when I was answering the phones at Georgia Tech, that was my job. Georgia Tech basketball. This is Chris. I say it. It was my job at Georgia Tech, but
right.
So I'm there. I'm in my second year. Sorry. My first year, I'm a volunteer. And this is where when you're around really good people and they look out for you, this is what you have to chase when you're a young coach. I'm a volunteer and I'm teaching, like I told you. The second year, Coach Hewitt bumped me up into an administrative coordinator position, it was called. And he only did that because he lost someone in that position. John O'Connor said to Coach Hewitt one day, hey, why don't you just move Chris up? He did. So I'm answering phones and I'm doing the administrative deal, and CY gets a job at his alma mater at Georgia Southern. And when he gets the job, I learned so much from being not only in that office in the ACC working for a legendary coach like Coach Hewitt, but CY comes up to me and said, hey, do you want to go to Georgia Southern with me? I said, yeah. And he's like, all right, I'm going to come to your house and talk to Heather. He did it, and that was it. But there was no interview. And he always said this one line that I think young coaches, this is important. The interview's already done. I've only interviewed for one job in college basketball in my whole life. It wasn't that one, obviously, but he has so many good one-liners, and that's one that sticks with me, is a lot of times your reputation and how you carry yourself, the interview's already done. And so I think that's a good nugget.
No, 100%, man. I love it. You guys probably would have come to Columbus, Ohio when CY was there and played us in the St. John Arena.
I believe I was there for that one, unfortunately.
Yeah. No, you guys actually came out in the first half and got going a little bit. We eventually obviously won the game, but it was like the energy on that bench was incredible. I still remember because it was a throwback game for us at Ohio State, and what they would do is we'd wear like the old, yeah, we wear the old gray jerseys with the lettering. And so it was literally like a throwback game because it was an old school arena. I remember you guys came and played us. It was right around the holidays, I think. I can't remember, but I do remember CY, man. He was storming that sideline, man. His feet were on fire. Another Rising Coaches podcast, a graduate, by the way, alumni. Why?
He's
awesome.
I love how you said just be available and keep showing up, because I feel like in today's society too, just with work, that's the one thing that's completely overlooked. I truly, not even just coaching, but just everything. I feel like a lot of people don't want to put the work and the time in, right? And then to your point exactly, like positions opened up. Those weren't things that you saw. Those weren't things that were promised, but you put the work in. You just kept showing up. You were available whenever you needed to be there. You went through the unpaid hours to ultimately get to long route, obviously, but now you're over at Rice as an associate head. So obviously keep putting in the time and showing up, and look where it got you, which is great. There's a lot of people that need to be able to hear that. And that's the one thing that I feel like people don't really do, is when they show up, maybe they're not fully present, right? They might show up to a practice, but you're not fully present. You don't have your head on a swivel looking for something that, how can I help, and to be able to take different tasks. So that's great.
To take Dougie's point a notch further, a friend of mine he's a godfather of a kid that just got recruited this fall, and kid committed somewhere, but he went with the kid on one of his visits. And during the visit, and obviously this guy's fairly connected with college basketball, knows a lot of coaches, knows a lot of people. And he said two or three coaches during the visit are asking him how they can eventually become a head coach, or how they can, what's the next step? I know I'm here, but what can I do next? And he kept saying the same thing to all these guys. Do a great job here.
Right.
Do a great job where you're at. You guys are asking me how to get somewhere else. Like, how about getting this recruit to commit that's here in your own backyard right now? He just it was really a microcosm of what Doug just said. It's just a real-time example recently of where we are. And that's why it sounds like cliche, or people probably accuse me and Doug of beating it into the ground. But it is that important to be available, be reliable, make your job, make the people above you that you have to serve, make their job easier, be an incredible collaborator with the people next to you, and then be an unbelievable giver with the people that have to answer to you, whether they be GAs, managers, all that. Not so much looking down on anybody, but just the idea that you can serve every direction. Give with the young generation, collaborate with the ones next to you, and then serve the people above you.
Not for sure. I think that's what we were talking about earlier, that when you're in it for the right reasons, that's the stuff that organically just happens. And then I think what ends up happening in this profession, maybe more than others, just you develop a reputation. And another CYism, you only get one of them. You get one reputation in this business. So many times, just even for friends of mine will call and they just get a job and they're looking for a young assistant. Hey, do you know of anyone? And so immediately you say a name and they start asking around, what do you know about so-and-so? And if it's not an immediate stamp, they're probably going to the next name. Or if it's not a glowing, oh, you got to do it, it's a no-brainer, it's probably, I think you develop your reputation. So as a coach, especially a young coach, go out of your way to protect your reputation, whether it's where you work, who you work for, who you surround yourself with. I've been so fortunate. The 6 or 7 head coaches that I've worked for are unbelievable human beings. And then this, the assistant coaches that you work alongside, that's my favorite part about this period, is just relationships that you develop. So when you're around good people, that's when, you know, this calling of, and this life as a coach is so fun.
So I want to make sure to ask too, because you talked on it in the beginning, and I think it's very relevant now. So it might be something to touch on, but with obviously before the portal, I know you hit 3 different schools as a player. You said that you help like mentor players now who are going through similar things. What are some ways that, especially you've experienced it from a player perspective, now you're seeing it from a coaching perspective. So what are some ways that, or maybe some advice that you could give for players who are hitting the portal looking to go to another school, or coaches who are bringing in new people who they're unsure of? What are some ways that you navigate that now?
Yeah, I wish I had the answers to all of that. I can give you my opinion on it. But the few things that came to mind as you were talking, I think in recruiting, I guess I'm an analogy guy. That's how my mind works. I immediately go to it. And I end up saying this a lot in recruiting, because nowadays you recruit, like whether it's high school guys or whoever, you never know if they're going to stay at that school that they choose. So you want to handle it the right way. So I always use the analogy, because this has happened maybe 6 or 7 times to me, where you're going to run into that young man in the airport 5, 10, 15, 20, 25 years from now. And I always tell them, look, when you see me in the airport or somewhere moving forward, I want you to have an immediate thought of, you know what? He's a good dude. He always kept it real. He always told me the truth. I don't want anything negative to come to mind. So however in the recruiting process, I always try to handle things the right way, communicate, be transparent, be honest, be upfront, have no ulterior motives, all the things that we all try to do, because I want, whether he comes to our school, wherever I'm at the time or not, I want to have that genuine relationship moving forward. So I use that a lot. And I guess from the player standpoint, once they're in your program and they start having thoughts about transferring, I think what I always try to tell them is, what do you want? What are you trying to get out of this experience? Because as I think back, what I recently used actually is, I know what I said when I was in college as to why I was transferring. There might have been a time when what I was saying didn't really match what I was thinking. I didn't want to say it out loud or didn't want to verbalize. So I think nowadays there's a tendency to maybe use a reason when there might be an alternative reason, whether that's the financial part. But just, I would just encourage guys to be honest with what they're trying to get out of it. Think about the big picture. That's probably the most important. The 4 years versus 40 years, everybody is that. The education piece has fallen by the wayside sometimes right now. So are you going to get your degree, progress towards degree, all those thoughts as you think about moving? But just be honest with yourself. What are you trying to get? can you accomplish that here? If you need to go elsewhere, guess what? Back to my analogy before, when I see you, I want you to know that I kept it real. I was honest, and you got to do what's in your heart, and I'm going to love you either way.
Yeah. No, I love that, man. It's funny. What you just said is very interesting because I was talking to one of our assistants here about the other day. Playing time or a better opportunity, that can mean a lot of different things. And I think sometimes playing time is the general, like, immediate break the glass reason to use. I think more guys leave because they're not getting poured into. Because I think if you really pour into your guys as best you can, 1 through 12, whether it's the guys, especially in, again, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, to be honest, 1 through 7 are usually fairly happy, although they leave for different reasons, of course. But I'm talking about the guys that say, I wanted to play more. That might be the case. That very well may be true. But I think sometimes they're not getting poured into. And what do I mean by that? They're not getting, they check into a game and they play 7 minutes, and they typically don't play as much, but they play 7, 8, 9 minutes. And there's no follow-up. There's no video. There's no, hey, what you did in that, I know we were up by a lot of points, but let's look at what you did in that time you were in the game. Let's get you in this 2-on-2, 3-on-3, stay ready games, right? Or let's continue to work you out and keep building you with that desperate lead. We need you. We don't know when that moment is. Right. But you're going to help us win a game at some point, and preparing guys for that. And I think sometimes playing time is maybe overused, not that it's never true, but I think the pouring into thing is probably a reason why more guys leave. Maybe they just don't want to say that. Like you said, what you're thinking and what you're saying are two different things. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think so. And I think you're right. And what immediately came to mind is just currently here at Rice working with Coach Lanier. This is my third stop with him, which is pretty unique. Georgia State, went to the NCAA tournament, SMU for 2 years, and now here at Rice. And then for me, a full circle moment. I don't know how many times it happens where you leave a school, Rice. I was here with Scott Pera for 2 years. Weird thing for me, recruiting Coach Lanier's son while I was at Rice, how I got introduced to Coach Lanier, and then I worked for him at Georgia State, and now this whole thing. But while you were talking, what I thought of, I think it's a strength of his, and what we try to, as assistant coaches working for him, it's what we try to model on a daily basis. But a lot of people say family atmosphere. We want a family atmosphere, and it starts with him. And the way we, you know, here at Rice build, and the same way all those other schools, is we're not afraid to tell our guys we love them. We want to establish a high level of trust that, good or bad, very transparent. It might hurt sometimes, but we're going to tell you the truth. When you were talking, I thought of one of our current players, Jalen Smith. And I don't mind saying this because I told him I was going to, for the rest of my coaching career, when I ever want to talk about the word sacrifice or even trust, like you're talking about, I'm going to use his name. Jalen Smith from Oak Ridge High School, played for Coach Reese at Oak Ridge and also Each One Teach One back in the day. We didn't recruit him at SMU. We inherited him. He stayed. So glad that he stayed. And then he made the decision to come with us to Rice. And his situation was he couldn't get a degree from Rice in 1 year. It's a Rice rule. So he chose to come to Rice because of this thing you're talking about, this trust, and sit out last year at Rice, top 20 academic school. He had to take real classes, and he actually did very well academically. But now he'll play this year, his last year for us here at Rice. But I guess Jalen Smith, to me, not embodies sacrifice and what he just did, but he displayed what you're talking about that we try to create here at Rice. And I think in coaching, that in this new landscape, you want, and not everyone's going to respond like Jalen has, but he's chosen to trust Coach Lanier and our staff and made the decision to move and do something that was actually very challenging for him to do because he felt like it was best for him. And I think that's what you were referring to.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And if they do decide to move on, it's going to be a really hard choice. Like, to the point where it's, Coach, like, you're probably hugging and crying on the way out the door. It's that tough for them.
Right.
But you want to make it that tough for them. And so I think that, to me, is trying to have that mentality of developing your whole team. Don't just develop the guys that play. But what does it look like to develop your whole team? Because you never know who you're going to need. And the hardest thing about guys coming off the bench is you're trying to prepare them for the moment that they don't know what's coming. But yeah. that's the challenge. That's the challenge. But I think that constant pouring into whatever that looks like, and it looks different for each guy. But what does it look like to just keep that meter running all through the season? Because typically once game starts and the rotations become a little bit more concrete, those are the guys that tend to maybe get left by the wayside in terms of continuing to be coached.
But yeah. I think that's where you have to be authentic. If it's not organic or authentic, I think those guys will see right through that too.
They can 100%. See through it. They can read it just like coaches can. Players can read that, whether you know what you're talking about, whether you – yeah, 100%. And then I'll even say, going off this, we've said this before, was always be recruiting your own guys. And whatever aspect that might be, even having one-on-one individual workouts with them and showing them that, look, we're trying to pour something into you. We want you to be able to do this and develop you into a player. Whether you're playing or not, at least let's get the work in to see if we can get you to the point where you start seeing more time. So, like, always and always find ways to, you said it, always pour into the guys and find ways to be able to continuously recruit them. And I love how you said the story about Coach Lanier's son, how you're recruiting him and then end up ultimately getting a job through him, because that's a, it's funny, but it's one of those that in the long haul, you got a job. If something were to hypothetically, you said something or lied to his son or something in a recruiting process, like you wouldn't necessarily have the same exact position that you're in now, which you can see you're obviously doing what you needed to do during the recruiting. You did a great job of it. He saw that. And here you are with a job down the line, and it all goes back full circle in some way.
Yeah, for me personally, when I hear you say that, I immediately go to my faith, my family. Those are the two most important things to me. And I believe God, just for whatever reason, it happened. And I'm so thankful. Coach Lanier will say he has a story on how that happened. But my wife was from Atlanta and he didn't know that. And but yeah, like just this, as you look back on your career, like just talking this through, it's just amazing just how many, one step leads to the next step leads to the next step. And I think all we can control is what we can control, and that's how we go, how we treat people, and how we do our job to the best of our ability.
Yeah, no, for sure. I just lived this thing real time the last month, as far as, and again, I'll be the first to admit, when you're in gap time, maintaining your faith is a beast. I'll be the first to admit that. Talk about wanting to, there's no portal. There's no portal to transfer into when your faith is struggling and go somewhere else. So you're on the team, period. But my point is, the way this thing went down for me is crazy. And so at some point we'll probably do a pod about it. And who knows? But I think our jobs are assignments, because to call them just jobs, the coaching profession in general is a calling. But the jobs that we get are their assignments. There's something deeper than just trying to win some games and how many guys maybe develop and may either get to the league or go play overseas, or how many ladders can you climb at the end of the season and cut down nets. That's great. You want to do all that as much as you can. But the 12 or 14 guys that are walking in and out of that building every day, that is that's where the depth of what we have to do and commit to is found. And that's where the assignment is to me, is just, what does it look like to elevate and max out those 12 or 14 people that you're working with? And yeah, I love your approach, man. Trust me, it's going to hit a lot of people, and it's a breath of fresh air, to be honest.
No, it's a challenge. Go ahead. Sorry.
I want to make sure to ask. Now, we've had a couple associate heads on, but we've never really gone in or dug into it much. But just the title of associate head coach, for people who maybe are unfamiliar, is there anything different with that in regards to like any more responsibilities that come about, any more like tasks? Now, obviously, I'm sure it's a case-by-case situation. It all depends on your head coach, but just give us a little insight about just having the associate head, what that means, how it necessarily affects your day-to-day, and give people an idea.
Yeah, first and foremost, I'm thankful that Coach Lanier gave that to me, thought that highly of me to give me that position. And every time once he did that here at Rice, after being with him for so long, what I immediately went to was every story he used to tell me, and maybe without even him thinking about it, about just how he did the same thing for Coach Barnes, Coach Donovan, Billy Donovan, Rick Barnes, those guys that he worked for. And so the job description is different for every head coach, like you mentioned. But what I try to do is exactly what he said he did. And here's what he used to say intermittently throughout these years together. And I think the word I'll use is a connector. I think as an associate head coach, your job is to be a connector of the staff with Coach Lanier, because his job is busy. He's got a lot on his plate. So he might mention something to me in passing that I need to relay to everyone else. And just personally, how I am, I want them to know that it's how I receive the message and share everything about that message, so they feel in the loop, and then connect the players with the staff and the staff with the coaches, just everything in a seamless way, to where it's, here's what I have. I want everyone to have what I have so we can do this thing together. We have an unbelievable staff here at Rice: Justin Crow, Andre Owens, Jordan Glover, assistant coaches. We've all been together now multiple places, and now added Jeff Martin from St. John's and Jack Schumann, whose father's in the business as well. So this group of people, I feel like as an associate head coach, your job is to make sure everyone is good. Is everyone good? Coach used to ask us as coaches, how are the guys? And he said he got that from Billy Donovan. He used to ask all the time, how are the players? What's my job? How is the staff? Is a GA? Does a GA need something that I can help him with? I need to make sure that happens. So in addition to being a connector, I think I can also help with overall processes, I guess, because job description wise here, I do scheduling. So scheduling's a monster. Academics at Rice, top 20. So that's another challenge. So can you help come up with processes and systems for the men's basketball office so that we are at the top of our game for Rice Athletics, because you fall under the Rice Athletics umbrella and you want to make sure that our program is on top of everything that Rice needs us to be on. So just A to Z, everything that is required in our program. Do we have a process for it? Weekly meetings, just check-ins, get everybody in the room. And this is what Coach used to say, without Coach Barnes, like he used to bring everybody in and say, hey, this is what we need to do for Coach. So he knew what Coach Barnes needed. Now, after so many years together, we as a staff, we know what Coach Lanier needs. So I think that ultimately falls on me to make sure I can do my best to make sure everyone is good.
Yeah. Well said, man. Well said. Go ahead, Doug. He made me think about something, but yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, like, you're getting the head coaching experience, but not necessarily, and I hate to say it that way, but not necessarily the pressure, right? I guess it's the truth. Like, you don't necessarily have all the pressure on your back. Obviously, Coach Lanier is the head coach, but you're getting the head coaching reps to be able to lead a assistant coaches meeting and all the assistants, to be able to lead the team, make sure they're doing everything right. Like, you're getting those reps early. So then once that opportunity presents itself, it's now you have a nice, I want to say easy transition, but you have at least somewhat of a footing. So that it definitely explains a lot.
Yeah. And I think just for, you know, what I always get when I listen to your guys' podcasts are things like this. Like, you have to find, if you can ever work for someone like I found here with Coach Lanier and the guys I've been fortunate to work for, you got to find someone that allows you and pushes you and gives you those responsibilities, because it's really the only way to grow. It's the only way. You think, but then you try and you're like, oh, I was wrong about that. I'm not doing that again. And as an assistant coach, and I'm just talking every position, you have to watch and take advantage of every mental rep. So you're sitting in a huddle. What is Coach Lanier saying? What I have said? Wow, he said that. That's amazing. I'm writing that down. I'm writing this down. And so if you're not taking advantage of the mental reps, because like you said, maybe you get an opportunity to have some other up. I know Coach Lanier mentions he took a team one time over the summer to get head coaching reps while he was an assistant. But if you're not getting like real reps, there's some fake reps, these mental reps that you got to take advantage of. And then when you work for someone right now, like we do for Coach Lanier, that is pushing us and wants us to be head coaches and is challenging us in that way, then I think that's really a dream for any young assistant coach.
Yeah, for sure, man. You have a great spirit about that role. This may piss some people off, but I don't care. But we have sometimes in our profession guys clamoring for that role. Let me change that. They're clamoring for that title, but they're not really, they don't really want the spirit of that role because they know that title is going to help propel them, maybe get attention from whether it's agents, search firms maybe pop up and they're saying, okay, who's the associate head coach at Rice? Okay, it's Chris Kreider. But if you had clamored for that and scratched and clawed and maybe knifed even a guy or two on your staff, which sadly we know that happens too, to get that title, but you're not really concerned with the spirit of the role, then ultimately, like you said, that comes back to bite you.
Coach.
But being a servant in that role is the key versus wanting the title, because the title doesn't always make the man, right?
No, for sure. And I can't wait to listen. You mentioned your podcast on how you got your opportunity right now. I can't wait to listen to that. But when I hear you say that, this is what comes to mind. I think this will be my 24th year. So over 20 years doing this. If I think back to what I was thinking when I was young, like hungry, trying to I just want to get my foot in the door. I was very naive. And so here's what I'll say about what you were saying. I think from what I've seen and the staffs that I've been on, I've been around some unbelievable assistant coaches that have never gotten an opportunity to be head coaches. I've been around guys that have had associate head coaching titles that have never had the opportunities to be head coaches. And so what I've learned is sometimes you put value on certain things that really are a facade. They really don't matter. And so I think what experience teaches you, some people say experience is the best teacher. I think that's true, but I heard someone say this that's even truer. Evaluated experience is really the best teacher. So if you go through things, but you never think about, but when you really evaluate, so here's what I'm evaluating personally. I can rattle off 5 assistant coaches that are not currently or haven't been head coaches that are better, more deserving. And it's just how this profession is. It's unlike any other profession, in my opinion. And
right.
So I think if you can have this perspective while we're in this rat race of a profession called college basketball coaching, I think it really helps.
Yeah, for sure. No doubt, man.
That's a great way to put it. No, I like that. I like that. It narrows it down and gives you a little bit more of an idea. But essentially, just a lot of people got to stop chasing the titles and more understanding of what it takes to be able to get there. So that shines a perfect light right on how it goes. But Coach, just to put it all there, thank you very much for being on here. We do have a final question that we always like to ask just to tie it up. And really what that is just looking back on your career, if we were to put you back into your first coaching position or ultimately towards the beginning of your coaching career, knowing what you know now, is there any advice that you would share with your younger self, and what would that advice be?
It may have already come up, but immediately I think this is so important that I'll say it again. I would tell myself to protect your reputation. So in every way, you're always being evaluated. Someone's always watching you. Another CYism. I've used a couple of them today. CY used to say that all the time. You're always being evaluated. And so I think for young coaches, it's important to remember, and I myself, as I mentioned, I was naive. You got to make sure you surround yourself with good people. And you also have to remember that it only takes one. It only takes one maybe poor decision or not a well thought out decision. And before you know it, your reputation is different. And there's 365 Division I jobs. So I think just the sheer number, they're hard to get. They're hard to keep. Yeah, once you get one, you got to fight to keep it. But if you know what you're doing, do a good job, work hard, you'll be fine. But before all of that, what I would tell myself is what other people think, you would think doesn't matter. You're not doing certain things for what they think. But I do think that's the reality. When your name comes up, what are people saying? How do they feel about you? Are you really being the authentic version of yourself? I think that would be important to keep in mind.
No doubt. Well said, my man. Well said.
The simple fact of never knowing who's watching My dad used to tell me that all the time. He goes, you never know when you go to an AU game. He goes, you never know who's in the stands. Sometimes people don't wear their logo on them because you never know. And I've seen that. And on the flip side of things, as a coach, I've gone into places where just pick up games or whatever, and you're watching people play. You have no intentions of actually recruiting. Maybe you're even there playing. You see a kid and you're like, oh, okay, let's keep an eye out for this kid. And it had no intentions of actually recruiting, but then you see somebody and you're like, oh, all right. And goes on the flip side, you never, as a player, a high school kid, had no idea that there's college coaches in the room. So you truly never know. Who was it, Mage, that I always draw a blank on who it was, but he got his first NBA position because he was helping someone's son.
It was Kevin Eastman.
Through workouts. It was Kevin Eastman with
Doc Rivers' son.
Rivers. Yeah, yep.
Austin's AU team.
He got his first job because he was putting Austin Rivers through a workout.
And yeah, their whole team. He was working out the AU team.
He's putting them through workout on, I think it was pick and roll development.
Yeah, I think that and just workouts in general. You're maybe like stuff. Coach them in a practice or something. And
that's how it works.
Austin goes home and his dad, man, this guy that just worked us out today. Wow.
Got a job. Doc Rivers offered him a job. It's perfect. I'm glad that you said that. That's definitely couldn't be any more accurate.
Absolutely. Chris, before Dougie lands the plane here, man, number one, it's been great getting to know you. Thank you again for doing this, but also thank you for the roundtable you did last summer and with this past summer. And I thought that was awesome. And your heart is in the right place with this game and what we do. And there's a reason why we had you on, because sometimes rising coaches, people might think we're trying to just crown people and top 40, under 40 and all that stuff. We're not doing that. This is more about people that are going to raise our profession, regardless of what level people coach at. So whether it's youth to NBA, but your heart's in the right place, man. And this game can't have enough people like yourself. We appreciate you, brother.
No, I appreciate all you guys do for the game. And thanks for the invite.
Thank Absolutely.
You. Of course. It's great to be able to so far meet you. I know we'll be talking a lot more, but you were saying before about connections. It's funny. Hey, that your college roommate was somebody who I was formerly known to, used to coach. I'm coaching in the same conference that you played in. So it's definitely a small world, and it's funny to be able to see connections meet. And all in all, great to be able to have you on here. Thank you for taking the time, and I'm sure we'll be talking more soon.
For sure. Thanks, Doug.
And everybody out there, thank you all for tuning in to another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. Again, your hosts here, Alan Major, Doug Caputo. Coaches, keep working and keep rising. We'll see you all soon. Take care.
Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines.
I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together.